नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Okay, so we're going to continue reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 7, Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb. So I'm going to read two, I think it's two up to five. There's no purport. I'll just read those quickly, and then we'll try to do the last one responsibly. So text 2, Sri Parada Vacha, Pitari Prashyate Smakam, Tapase Mandarachalam, Yudyodhya Mam Parang Chakrur, Vibhudha Dhanavan Prati. Prahlad Maharaj said, when our father, Hiranyakashipu, went to Mandarachala mountain to execute severe austerities in his absence, the demigods, headed by King Indra, made a severe attempt to subdue all the demons in warfare. So how does Prahlad know this? If he's in the womb, how does he know what his father was doing? By hearing. This is the whole point of this chapter. Prahlad is potent in knowledge because he learned by hearing. There are basically three ways of learning, Prabhupada repeated many times. First class person learns by hearing. Second class hears, then they have to go out and do it, and then after they get burned, then they learn. And third class never learns. After hearing and going out and doing and getting burned and going out and doing and getting burned, just like common criminals, they get steal, they get caught, they get thrown in jail, they come out, they steal again, get caught, get thrown in jail, they never learn. That's third class. So Prahlad is a first class learner. He heard, and he learned, and that was it, boss. So we should try to emulate that. Text 3. Pipalikaya here, eva dishya lokopatapanaha papena papabakshiti vadanto varsavadayaha. Alas, as a serpent is eaten by small ants, so the troublesome Hiranyakashipu, who always inflicted miseries upon all types of people, has now been defeated by the reactions of his own sinful activities. Saying this, the demigods, headed by King Indra, arranged to fight the demons. 4 and 5, Tesham Atibalodyogam Nishamyasura Yutapa Paha Vadyamanak Surayabhita Dudruvu Sarvato Disham Kalatra Putarvitaptan Grihan Pashu Parichadan Navikshyamananastvaritaha Sarve Prana Paripsavaha. These glasses are not so strong, can't see so clearly. When the great leaders of the demons who were being killed one after another saw the unprecedented exertion of the demigods in fighting, they began to flee, scattering themselves in all directions. Simply to protect their lives, they hastily fled from their homes, wives, children, animals, and household paraphernalia. Paying no heed to all these, the demons simply fled. So, in other words, not real chachas, because one of the qualities of a chacha is yudhye chapya palayanam, not running away from battle. So they're not real chachas. Text 6. Vyalam Pan Raja Shibiram Amara Jaya Kangshinaha Indrastu Raja Mahishim Vataram Mama Chakrahit. The victorious demigods plundered the palace of Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, and destroyed everything within it. Then Indra, king of heaven, arrested my mother, the queen. Then this text 7, for those who have access, they can repeat. Niyamanam bayod vignam. Those who have the verse can repeat. Niyamanam bayod vignam. Rudatim kurakim eva. Yadrishayagatas tatra. Devarshir dadrishepati. Niyamanam bayod vignam. Rudatim kurarimiva yadrichchaya gatastatra. Devarshir Dadrishepati Niyamanamayo Vignam Rudatim Kurarimiva Yadrishayagatas Tatra Devarshir Dadrishepati. Please chant. Niyamanam Bayovignam Rujatim Kurarimiva Yajitas Tatra Devarshir Dadrishepati. One of the ladies with computers, maybe? Give it a shot. No? Anyone else with their device who wants to chant? No? Okay. Synonyms. Niyamanam. Being taken away. Bhaya. Udvignam. Disturbed and full of fear. Rudatim. Crying. Kurarim. Iva. Like a kurari, offspring. Yadrichaya, by chance. Agataha, arrived. Tatra, on the spot. Deva Rishihi, the great Saint Narada. Tadrishe, he saw. Pati, on the road. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. As he was being led away, crying in fear like a kurari captured by a vulture, the great sage Narada, who at that time had no engagement, appeared on the scene and saw her in that condition. Actually, this one doesn't have a purport. I think it's the next one that has a short purport. Yeah. All right, I'll just continue. Text 8. Prahanayanam surapate netam aryasenagasam muncha muncha mahabhaga satim paraparigraham parigraham. Narada Muni said, O Indra, king of the demigods, this woman is certainly sinless. You should not drag her off in this merciless way. O greatly fortunate one, this chaste woman is the wife of another. You must immediately release her. Text 9. Sri Indra Vacha Aste syajatare viryam avishayam suradvishaha asyatam yavat prasavam mokshirta padavim gataha. King Idra said, in the womb of this woman, the wife of the demon Hiranyakashipu, is the seed of that great demon. Therefore, let her remain in our custody until her child is delivered, and then we shall release him. Release her. Purport. Indra, the king of heaven, decided to arrest Prahlad Maharaja's mother because he thought that another demon, another Hiranyakashipu, was within her womb. The best course, he thought, was to kill the child when the child was born, and then the woman could be released. So, here's another conundrum. When he gave class, Devamrita Maharaj was saying that there's so many points that are difficult to reconcile. So here's another one that's difficult to reconcile. Here's Indra, the king of the suras, the demigods. Demigod means one who's trying to live a godly life, accepts the existence of God, tries to acknowledge and serve God, tries to live a godly life. So how can the king of such personalities want to kill a child? That seems incongruous, I mean. I guess even if you're afraid of the child after the child is born and you keep him under close surveillance, maybe even keep him, you know, incarcerated somewhere, but to kill the child, that seems like extreme. So this is how much afraid they were of Hiranyakashipu's offspring. They thought he's going to be another Hiranyakashipu, so we'll kill him in the womb. That's too demoniac. That's abortion. That's bad. But we'll wait till he's born and kill him. Really, really also difficult to understand how he godly person trying to live a godly life could even think of such a thing. We would all be horrified if somebody killed somebody's child and said, well, he's going to be a demon. He's going to be a great demon. I'm justified in doing that. We would all, you should burn in hell for that. So difficult to understand. But The point is the demigods were very much afraid of Hiranyakashipu. After he left, they took advantage of his absence to attack, and they subdued, defeated his henchmen, followers who were not real kshatriyas. They ran away in fear. They said they abandoned their wives and homes and ran away. I mean, it's not really chivalrous guy. It's not really up to the standard of real kshatriyas. And so the demigods conquered. They arrested Prahlad's mother. And thanks to the intervention of Narad Muni, he was spared. So again, the point is that Prahlad is relating this history narrative to his classmates because he heard. Obviously, he was in the womb. He didn't see what was going on. But by hearing, later on, he understood the situation. And now he's repeating what he heard. And also repeating these wonderful instructions that we should all take to heart. Yesterday, Maharaj was also pointing out that the scientists have acknowledged that the child in the womb is moving, apparently to music that it's hearing. So if it's dancing in the womb, it's hearing. Well, hey, welcome to the party. I mean, common people have understood this for a long time. Nowadays in America, it's a very, especially amongst those who have money, it's very, very competitive scene for getting their children educated. So you may live in a particular well-to-do community, neighborhood, but the class size is limited. Let's say there's a very well-known or very desirable place to send your children to school, a Montessori school or whatever kind of school it is in that community, but they only have a limited amount of spaces. So the parents start jockeying for position to put their kids into school way before the child is even born. And they know if my child is not, you know, very, very smart, there's no chance they're going to get in even though I have money. So they take advantage of this. They start indoctrinating the child within the womb. They recite Shakespeare. They listen to classical music from morning till night because they want the child to be a musician, whatever. They know that the child in the womb can hear. And therefore they do that. They you know, expose the child to all kinds of positive sound vibrations so that when it's finally born, it will be advanced enough to make it into this particular school that they want it to go to. Literally, it's really, really competitive out there for good schools, you know. We see a lot of devotees, they move back to Culver City when they have children because Culver City schools are supposed to be good and they're free. So a lot of devotees, they go off, they leave this community, but when they have children, they come running back and they find some kind of home somewhere in Culver City because they want their kids to go to Culver City schools. So, yes, even in today's day and age, you know, when the scientists are out to lunch, we would say the common people don't necessarily agree with them. For instance, the scientists have been trying overtly or covertly to kill God for decades, but every time they do a survey, lo and behold, the majority of people still believe in God. So the scientists are not doing such a good job there. And we would say they're not even gentlemen. Prabhupada said they're not even gentlemen. You have your theories, which you're constantly refining. I'll give you an example. In the news recently, they've said that they used to think that the dinosaurs were wiped out by some huge cosmological event. Some giant asteroid hit the planet and kicked up a dust cloud and it blanked out the sunlight for so long that the dinosaurs died and only small creatures, some or other, survived. But now they're thinking that maybe that wasn't the case. Now they're coming up with a different theory. But the problem is that whatever theory they come up with, they believe in just like we believe in our Shastra. They make fun of the religionists that you people are just operating on faith, unsubstantiated faith, but they do the same thing. I once busted a so-called scientist at USC. I was speaking on a panel there on this very point because he was making fun of the religionists that they just believe in faith. So I asked him, you believe in this Big Bang, right? You realize it's just a theory. Can you prove it? So you're just as Sariputta Puru once said, you're just as, you know, full of faith as any Baptist believes he's going to be saved by Jesus. You believe in your science in the same way. And you're constantly revising it. And you don't have the decency, Prabhupada said, not even gentlemen, to allow the God theory to be taught alongside with their scientific theories. They literally drive God out of the education process. An example of that, recently in England, Bhaja Narayan Prabhu sent this around. I wasn't aware until he sent the notice around to everyone here in America that in England, you know, they have these charter schools like we have here in America. And we have one such school that affiliated with the Bhaktivedanta Manor, where the government actually pays religious or organizations to run their schools, and then they teach whatever they want to teach there. So we have such a school in England. But now, recently, they passed in the parliament this bill that if you get funding from the government, then you must teach Darwinian evolution. You must teach it, because a lot of these schools, they weren't teaching it. They don't believe in it. We don't believe in it. So why would we teach it in our school, even if it's funded by the government? But now they've passed the bill that if you're funded by the government, you must teach Darwinian evolution. You must teach it. Otherwise, your funding is in jeopardy. So this is how they are. This is how they are. Everybody knows it's a theory. They know it's they're teaching theories because they're constantly revising their theories, but they don't want any other theories to be taught. That's not right. That's cheating. They're cheaters. So the cheaters are very, very happy that this bill was passed. They quoted one prominent scientist in England who was saying, yes, and I hope it's thoroughly enforced. You know, he's very, very happy that they passed this bill, that they must teach Darwinian evolution to the children. So Prahlad and others were fortunate to be born in such a high state of consciousness. They obviously, they're not affected by whatever they hear that's nonsense. Prahlad was not affected by all the nonsense that Chandanamarka were teaching him. But most kids are not in that category. They're very much absorbed, like sponges, all the nonsense that the teachers throw out to them. And therefore, when they grow up, even when they're fortunate enough to come in contact with the truth, like we have, still, because we were mistrained, miseducated, in the beginning of life, we have our, when it comes to things like statements about the moon and stuff like that, well, you know, many devotees, for us knows, many devotees, Surya knows, many devotees were really blown away when Prabhupada said they did not go to the moon. Because the whole America was jubilant. Yay, we've landed the man on the moon. And Prabhupada said they did not go to the moon. It became a crisis of faith for many devotees that the news media, everybody's saying the Americans have landed the man on the moon, and Prabhupada is saying they did not go to the moon. Who should we believe? Who should we accept? It seems obvious they went to the moon. So, if we're not on the platform of a Prahlad Maharaj, where we're fortunate enough to just, it just rolls off the back of such a personality like water off a duck's back. He does not believe in it, didn't accept anything that they said, he's still, and as soon as they turned their backs, he was teaching the real truth. But again, most children are not in that category. So, if you're a parent in ISKCON, it is really, really your duty to make sure that your children absorb the absolute truth as much as possible. Even if later on in life, by force of circumstance, they have to go to the Karmi schools. At least in their first, as Prahlad said, Komar Acharya Pragyo. At least in their first 5 years of life, he was saying at least at five they should start getting Bhagavad Dharma. But in our case, because a lot of these kids wind up going to Karmi schools later on, in their first, from day one up until they are unfortunate enough to go to Karmi schools, they should be absorbing this Bhagavad Dharma. They should be absorbing this Bhagavad Gita. They should be absorbing. I remember when I went to Russia in 95, they had a little Gurukul there in Moscow. And it's so nice and refreshing to hear children, 3, 4, 5 years old, reciting Bhagavad Gita by heart. Dharma kshetra, kurukshetra, sama. They just, you know, in their squeaky little voices, they're reciting Bhagavad Gita. It's so enlivening to hear that. Because you know, their brains are getting proper development from the beginning of life. And then even if later on, they have to go to karmic schools, you don't lose that. It stays there, deep in your consciousness. And the time will come when it gets triggered. And they'll, again, even if they drift away, they'll again come back to the right path. So, any questions on any of these points before we move on to speak a few words about Ram Dass Prabhu? All right, so many of the young devotees here probably have no idea who Ram Dass is. Ram Dass was a very, very exalted devotee who served primarily as head pujari here in New Dwarka for many years, and passed away. And we've established this day of remembrance. The second Sunday in December is a day of remembering Ram Dass. And even if it doesn't happen anywhere else, it should continue to happen here in New Dwarka, which has been, the president said since time immemorial, local communities or dhams, they have festivals that may not be observed elsewhere, but so at least in New Dwarka, we should always try to remember him. I didn't know him personally that well, because I was always in different temples. But whenever our paths cross, like they said, just a moment's association with an advanced devotee can affect you. So whenever we did have time and chance to associate, I was very much impressed by not only his obvious dedication to Srila Prabhupada's movement and to these deities, but his concern for rank and file devotees. And this is something that was dear to Prabhupada. Prabhupada used to say that, you know, because sometimes, you know, we were so fired up in serving Prabhupada that if a devotee would get sick, they would be neglected. And Prabhupada said, no, this is not proper. If your god brother is ill, you have to help. You have to, don't neglect the devotees. You have to take care of them. He would point out that we spend so much time and energy and resources to make a devotee. So to neglect them is not good. You've already made a devotee with such effort. Do your best to keep them, happy and happily engaged in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, you know, if you continue just running out and making, but there's no sustaining, no maintenance of what you already have, which is understandable. In Kali Yuga, maintenance, because maintenance is in the mode of goodness, it's very difficult. And that's why you see many people, they buy something, it breaks, and they just go out and buy another one. Because to find somebody to fix or maintain anything is very, very difficult. They have different maintenance people. They make so much money. Think of plumbers. You know, a plumber can make $80 an hour. Because to maintain anything, nobody wants to maintain. So if you take the trouble to learn how to maintain something, you can make a good living. Now, we're in a throwaway society. You make something, a watch or a computer or whatever, it breaks, I'll just go buy another one. But when it comes to devotees, we shouldn't have that attitude. We're not in a throwaway mood when it comes to devotees. Devotees should be eager to help other devotees to maintain their Krishna consciousness. So I'm going to just read a little bit here from a compilation of I think this was written mostly about Ram Dass's departure, which took place in Vrindavan, and it was mostly compiled by Kala Kanta Prabhu, with assistance from other devotees. Remembering Ram Dass. After the third day of a devotee's departure from this world, there is the Smriti Sangra ceremony. That is when we remember our association with a god brother who has just departed. In the case of Ram Dass Prabhu, many devotees spoke at this ceremony held in Vrindavan in 2000. The information in this paper is a summary of this presentation. It is significant that Ram Dass Prabhu left this world during the auspicious days when the moon is waxing between Ekadashi and Purnima in the very auspicious month of December. Prabhupada said that Vrindavan is a place for taking birth and a place for dying. To show us by his example, Srila Prabhupada left this world from Vrindavan. When Ram Dass came to know that his time was up, when the doctors told him he did not have much longer, he set his heart on leaving this world from Vrindavan Dham. There is a saying that there are three types of Vrijvasis: one who is born in Vrindavan, one who lives in Vrindavan, and one who dies in Vrindavan. The one who dies in Vrindavan is the real Vrijvasi. We know of cases, particularly we know of one where somebody was very proud of being a Vrijvasi, but when it was time to leave his body, he was rushed out of Vrindavan and died elsewhere. So it's not about being born there, it's about where you leave the world. To understand how Ram Dass could have the kind of conviction to be able to do this,
we have to look at his life in Krishna consciousness. Ram Das was a very steady, determined servant of Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish, Gornitai, Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra. Additionally, he was a devoted servant of the servants of the deities. He was always available, always on call for whatever service needed to be performed. He was not much disturbed if a devotee said they would perform an artik and then didn't show up. He would just cover for them. He was very fixed on keeping the exact high standard of service that Srila Prabhupada instituted. He was very devoted to Srila Prabhupada. Subhas, were you in Vrindavan when Ram Das left? Subhas Prabhu, were you in Vrindavan when Ram Das left this morning? Okay. Anybody here that was there when it happened? I saw him, what was that, 2000? I saw him the year before. Let's see. So many trips that they kind of merged together. I think, yeah, I was definitely there in 98. And I think I was there in 99 also, or maybe not. Maybe it was 98 that I saw him, yeah. Ram Das was born in Philadelphia and spent 20 years of his life there. He spent his next 20 years in New York City. One day he hitchhiked across the country with only a few dollars in his pocket with an idea of settling at a Rosicrucian farm in California. In 1980, he arrived in California and spent the night in a homeless shelter in downtown Los Angeles. The next day, devotees came to chant in that area. He was attracted to the devotees. They gave him a dinner card and a Back to Godhead magazine, which he read in the shelter. The next day, with no bus fare, he set out for the temple on foot. He walked the 10 miles, which took him 4 hours to get to the temple. A devotee named Nitai greeted him and gave him some Mahaprasadam. He was invited into an office where he spoke to the temple vice president. He asked him, "Do you like what you see here?" Ram Das said, "Yes, yes, it is wonderful here." The VP invited Ram Das to stay for 3 days. Ram broke down and cried. Ram Das had a personality that was very much like a communications or public relations person, although he had never held such a job. Soon he was put to work with Amala Bhakta Das, given the responsibility to open up Sankirtan spots and arrange for permits for Rath Yatra and Janmashtami. At the time, he would dress Gornitai once a week in their night outfit. Then one day, Vatsal Prabhu, the temple president at that time, told him, quote, "We think you'd make a great pujari. I will talk to you about it sometime." And a few minutes later, he returned and said to Ram Das, "You are going to be head pujari." That's the potency of temple presidents in ISKCON. They can turn you from non-pujari into head pujari in just a few minutes. In the words of Krishna Kumari, who was married to Ram Das some years later, the head pujari had just left and the situation was beyond control. There were 100 women to deal with, including Madhukarta, and they were Prabhupada disciples, and some of them could be very overbearing ladies. There were 100 of them, and they couldn't find anyone to manage them. Interesting, they didn't find one of the women to manage the other women. Okay, the problem was not with the service or the cooking and offerings. The problem was with the 100 ladies, so they thought. Here's a man who's mild-mannered and an older man than everyone else. So Ram Das was asked to fill the position. He took the attitude that the women were already trained and dedicated and more qualified than himself. So he asked them to tell him what to do. There was an initial meeting between Ram Das and several of the most qualified dressers and seamstresses, and together they agreed upon standards for the way the deity should be dressed. Ram Das became particular about that. Every day he would look over all of the dressing that had been done just before the doors were to be opened at 7 a.m. to inspect to see if anything was out of place, missing, or not in keeping with the standard way the deity should appear. Though particular about standards, Ram Das dealt with all of the pujaris in a very loving and personal way. He would tell us repeatedly, quote, "Just remember, Krishna loves you." So we can take that to heart. Just remember, Krishna loves you. "We strive like anything in this world to get someone else to love us. neglecting the Supreme Person who already loves us. So this is very good instruction. Just remember, Krishna loves you. There were always people in and out of his apartment who wanted to see him, either for herbs, he studied medicinal herbs and prescribed different uses for them, or for help with their personal problems. He seems somehow magically connected to herbal formulas, but perhaps more important than the herbs he prescribed was his kindness. He was always ready to hear out and spend time with anybody and preach to them. He was very approachable. He loved to read Prabhupada's books and could recite verbatim some of the long sets of prayers found in Srimad Bhagavatam. On the temple altar, when he said the standard pujari mantras, he would recite them in Sanskrit and then over again in English. He used to say that he couldn't see any point in praying it if he didn't know the meaning of what he was saying. His recitation was rhythmic and poetic. Very important point. Quite often devotees say, well, you know, Prabhu, I don't have any brain for memorizing Sanskrit, so memorize the English. That's why Prabhupada translated his books into English. Otherwise, he could have just left the Sanskrit. He took the time, the trouble to translate it into English so you could memorize it in English. What's the problem? So, I'm going to read just a couple more points and then we'll leave time for anybody who would like to say a few words. Let's see. So Ramdas became ill, and the doctors tried their best this way, that way. But then it became evident that medicines weren't going to do the trick. I mean, we all know, ultimately, we have to leave this body. No amount of medication is going to prevent that. So Ramdas, being intelligent, came to that conclusion and moved on to Vrindavan. So we're going to pick up at that point. Ramdas spent his last 3 years in Vrindavan. During that time, he mostly read and chanted and listened to lectures. He did some deity worship in his ashram. He did not engage in idle gossip. If you talked to him about anything at all, he would always relate whatever you said to Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. He became very attached to Srila Prabhupada, and he had many copies of a drawing of Prabhupada's lotus feet, laminated or framed, to distribute to devotees in worship. In his room in Vrindavan, he also kept many beautiful pictures of Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish, whom he had lovingly served without hesitation for many years. I can attest to that. I mean, that last time that I saw him in Vrindavan, even though he was ill, he took the time to always greet the devotees that came from New Dwarka to Vrindavan. He would personally prepare lunch for us. Amazing personality. And as it's said here, no idle chit-chat. He would always have some Krishna Katha to discuss. Krishna Kumari, his wife, did a wonderful, very devoted service by taking care of Ramdas during those last days. She took care of his body, making sure he always had clean cloth and the special diet and medicine he required. Ramdas was not at all agreeable to taking the Western medicine that was prescribed for him. The doctor said he would not unnecessarily use up his energy getting, he should not unnecessarily use up his energy getting out of bed in order to circumambulate a Govardhan Shila and to read. But Ramdas said, save energy for what? I can't do anything else. Krishna Kumari explains, quote, I remember at one point I started to panic, and he could see that. So he decided, as he usually did, to tell me to leave the room. He wanted to be alone. He was very alert and conscious. I left, but I came back in and I said, Ram, Prabhupada is here and everything is all right. He had the laminated picture of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet upon his heart. He said, Krishna, Krishna. And he turned to a picture of Srila Prabhupada. His soul left as we were both chanting. That's the way to go. Chanting, Krishna, Krishna. Kavachandra Maharaj was with Ramdas on the day that he left his body. They were laughing and joking together. Ramdas was very weak but happy. Maharaj gave him his usual treatment, a massage. Of Ramdas, Maharaj said, one cannot find fault with him. He was never scrambling for some position or any of these things. He was always blissfully serving Krishna. If we selflessly serve Krishna, that's the result. He will reciprocate and give us everything. Ram Dass reminds us that we can dig down deep to think of all the good qualities of someone. This isn't very hard in his case. He always wanted us to see the solutions and not dwell on the problems. Sometimes our problems are quite complex. Ram Dass exhibited the solutions by surrendering to Krishna, and Krishna kindly took care of him and arranged everything. Ram Dass Prabhu Ki Jai. So I know there are at least a few devotees in the room who knew him personally. So if we can get the microphone, I know Mother Nagapatni would like to say a few words. And maybe Subhas Prabhu, Sura Prabhu. Yes. So Mother Nagapatni had her hand up first.
Thank you. It's so nice to see that Ram Dass is honored in this way, because he was a very wonderful personality who walked among us. When I first met Ram Dass, it was like meeting an old friend. He was so friendly and so encouraging and so enthusiastic. He stood over 6 feet tall. It had this beautiful, big, bright smile always on his face. And it was really touching how whenever I came to New Dwarka, he was so encouraging. About a month before he left, I was in Vrindavan and went to visit him with several friends, and he gave us the same laminated picture that he kept and that he put on his heart, which I keep on right next to my bed.
I have one also on my bed.
This is just to kind of preface this. I'm not really into dreams and woo-woo stuff, but I had a dream on the day that he passed, before I knew he passed, but I don't feel like this was just for me. I think this is for everybody, where Ram Dass came in my dream with this big smile, and he said, "Don't ever be discouraged in your service. You have no idea what's waiting for you. It's so wonderful."
Terrible. I would just add one other thing to what you said, Nagapati Prabhu. He was almost always smiling. So when he didn't smile, when he scowled at you, you knew something was up. I think some other devotees had their hands up before you. Gauri Das Pandit wanted to say something. And if we could keep it brief, because we're running close to breakfast time, so whatever, just try to keep it brief. Thank you.
In 1985, another devotee named Srinath got brain cancer. And so Ram Dass and I took him down to Tijuana to a cancer-curing clinic to try to save Srinath. He was a lifelong brahmachari, and he was very involved in the marathon here every year. Anyway, Ram Dass, you know, we were like fasting on carrot juice and apple juice. He was very concerned about all the devotees, and especially when Srinath got serious. So they told us in Tijuana, though, that it was too late for Srinath to save him. And so we took him to the hospital in San Diego. And so I stayed there and guarded him, and we kept playing a Prabhupada tape. And Ram Dass had to come back here to do the puja. Then the next day, Ram Dass came back with a garland from Rukmini Dwarkadish, and he put it on Srinath. And I hadn't eaten yet, so we went to Govinda's to have lunch. And Krishna Katha, the security guard, stayed there to guard Srinath, because he wanted to have a devotee with him all the time. So we came back from lunch, and I took one look at Srinath, and before he had some luster, he had some color, but he was paste white, and his mouth was a little open. So I said, "Oh my God, he's left his body." And then Krishna Katha woke up, and he said, "I just had a dream that the Vishnu Dutas came and took Srinath away." And I said, "That wasn't a dream. That really happened. He's left his body like within 20 minutes after getting that garland." And so anyway, I didn't have a lot of association with Ram Dass, but what I did was I could see that he was such a loving, nice devotee. Jai.
Jai, thank you. David Ahiti, somebody can bring the mic over, please, for her.
Well, I owe him a lot, because he's the one who encouraged me to dress here. and I probably wouldn't have, but he was really pushing. And it was great because I got association with him. And Ram Dass was a really special guy. He was just full of love, and he did want to serve the devotees. And he was very dedicated to these deities. And I was here when we had the earthquake. And it was my morning to dress, and Ram Dass was opening the door to see the damage, and he wouldn't let me in. But I kind of wanted barged in, because I guess I got that kshatriya thing in me. And he goes, stay back, because he didn't know the damage. And he grabbed all the deities, took them off the altar, put them in a bus, and he just took charge like the general. And really, I could see the love that was pouring out of this devotee. He was really special. And when he got sick, I went to the hospital to visit him. And I asked him, I said, Ram, are you ready to go? He goes, no, I'm not ready to go. So pray to Krishna to keep me here for a little while. And so Krishna made an arrangement for him to go to Vrindavan to pass. And in Vrindavan, he actually made Rukmini and Dwarkadish famous, because he went around to all the storekeepers, and he brought pictures. No one knew about Rukmini Dwarkadish in Vrindavan. He's the one that brought Rukmini Dwarkadish to Vrindavan. And that's how everybody remembered Ram Dass in Vrindavan, that he brought Rukmini Dwarkadish to Vrindavan. And Krishna made the arrangement. He left. But we had a little time with him, so I felt fortunate.
Hare Krishna.
Fortunately, I knew Krishna Kumari and Ram Dass for a few years before he left, and he was so loving, both of them. But the one thing that I would like to say is that Vidya told me that the morning after Ram Dass left his body, she didn't know yet that he had left, and she was walking on the path and right behind the temple at Krishna Balaram, the tree. And Ram Dass appeared in front of her, and some like 25 feet in front of her, like that. And he said, Thank you for all the arrangements you made for us to come to Vrindavan. And then he just disappeared.
Hari Bol. Wow. Ram Dass Prabhu Ki Jai. So, Asi, you want to say anything? Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Hey.
Yes, Ram Dass Prabhu. Yes, I worked with him from 86. I came in 86, and we hit it off pretty well. We were pretty good buddies. And I think what was really nice about Ram Dass Prabhu was that he was a pretty much open kind of personality, and he was very concerned about devotees. If you were in any way sniffling or you weren't feeling very good, he immediately had something for you, either a big, huge laddu or a samosa. And he said, no, I can't eat it. He said, no, I'll eat it anyway. So he was kind of, he was that kind of an individual. He kind of like pressed a lot of nice things upon yourself. And if you were feeling not very good mentally, he would take his time to at least speak to you and ask you what's wrong. So that was definitely his character. And I think one of the, of course, we've said a lot of things about Ram Dass through the years, and I've repeated myself many, many times, but I think the most important thing that I recall, which was, I think, really amazing, was that Ram Dass actually left the material world through Vrindavan. And I think that's in itself, speaks for itself in his ability to be able to be here, do service for Srila Prabhupada's Krishna Conscious Movement, but then have the opportunity to go to Vrindavan and really become purified. He took 3 years. So he didn't like freak out. There are devotees that have gone to Vrindavan to leave this material world, and they can't do it. They couldn't do it. They actually left. There's several that were actually, there's at least two or three stories that I've heard where some Prabhupada disciples went to Vrindavan to pass away, and they couldn't make it. One actually was running down the street one time, and they had to actually go catch him. Yeah, he just freaked out so terribly bad about having to die that he wanted to go to Delhi, but they wouldn't let him. So when nobody was around, he snuck out of his room and started running down the street, and somebody spotted him, and they caught him, and they forcefully brought him back, and he died something like 2 or 3 days later. So it's not easy to, you know, die in Vrindavan. It's a very special place for special devotees. So he was very special in the sense that he stayed there for 3 years waiting to die. And that's real purification. And what to speak of actually driving down that street, you know, landing in Delhi, driving down that street towards Krishna Balaram Mandir, knowing that you will not come back, that you will not go down that street again going out. That's a very tough thing in the mind. So I would think that just that in itself, we don't have to say very much more about Ram Dass. That speaks for itself in terms of his character and the mercy that he received from worshipping Rukmini and Dwarkadish.
Jai Ram Dass Prabhu ki jai. Rukmini Dwarkadish ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Hari Hari Bhav.